A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The lights are probably gone.
So had the stairs.
You are just number six.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 450. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about Crodman Doon and the Flaming Sword of Fire. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, we're back with the second part of our discussion of this BBC Two and Comedy Central co-production series from 2009. Depending on how you watch it, it is 6 30-minute episodes, or possibly you might find the first two episodes edited together into one. And it brings humor, sex comedy, workplace comedy to a fantasy sword and sorcery setting, and as ever gets us talking about some of the genre shows we have covered and what happens when you clash genre with comedy and how well that works.
Yes, absolutely. So continuing with some of the misadventures, Crodman Doon and his gang of freedom fighters continue to blunder their way through their adventures. They meet other rogues and rebels and some strange creatures. They meet a bisexual cyclops called the Biclops, for instance, and they are along the way coming into conflict with Chancellor Dungalore and his assistant Barnabas.
They do indeed. Dungalore is ever up to his evil tricks, but also being remarkably strange about administration and just random acts of violence. Barnabas trying to assist him, and Crodman Doon does some other resistance fighters. They're trying to link up with them and somehow overthrow Dongalore's evil regime. But can they do that, or will they just continue with their sort of petty squabbling and rather sort of dysfunctional relationships within the group?
Yeah, indeed.
Now, as we hinted last time, we wanted to talk about some of the inspirations for Crodman Doon, where this stuff comes from. We know from our production notes that Peter A. Knight cited specifically Lord of the Rings and also Monty Python and the Holy Grail. So those are obvious starting points for us.
Yeah, and it's hard not to be influenced by Lord of the Rings and sort of sword and sorcery high fantasy. We also have some Star Wars influence here with there being a hero journey with the evil villain, but also the ghostly spiritual guide General Arcadius is very much like the Force ghost of Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know, with the character dying in the first episode and then showing up as this luminous ghostly being.
Very much the Force ghost.
Yeah.
You say, Obi-Wan Kenobi showing up to guide Crodman Doon. And it was funny because I was watching this show and I was thinking, this seems like a Game of Thrones parody, particularly as I'm currently in the middle of a Game of Thrones rewatch. But actually, of course, this show is 2 years before Game of Thrones. So there's some elements actually just seem to have leaked from Crodman Doon into that show, particularly the gag about them trying to do a funeral on a boat where they're standing on the shore watching the boat float out into the river, and one of them is going to fire a flaming arrow to set the funeral pyre on alight. And of course, misses several times until the far more competent Annika takes over. And I noticed that happened in Game of Thrones a couple of years later.
I'm guessing that's a coincidence, and most of the other things in common are because of Lord of the Rings influences, but who knows?
I think so, yes. I think it's unlikely that Weiss and Benioff were taking much from Crodman Doon when they made the Game of Thrones series.
We also get some workplace-based humor, I guess the tradition of The Office. particularly the idea that Crod and Annika have split up. They're no longer a couple, but they're continuing to have to work together.
And we continually get this stuff about them, you know, this group of sort of five people having to work together, not being terribly good at it, you know, getting things wrong, misadventures, blunders, and squabbling amongst themselves the whole time. Plus, of course, Dongalore and Barnabas doing something very similar in the castle, but in that case, as I say, these sort of random acts of violence towards the people thrown in from time to time.
Yes, absolutely. So we do need to talk about representation in this, because it's something that they take on here. I think it's fair to say that the show was not well received. It was not well reviewed. It was not a rating success. It did not do very well. It was criticized for its stereotypical portrayal of gay characters, in particular the character of Bruce.
Yes. Now, one of the sort of gags in this show is that Crod Mandoon himself seems to be rather uncomfortable, I'm going to say, with just about everything and everyone, but particularly he seems to struggle with the idea that his boss, his mentor, General Arcadius, was gay or bisexual, and that the general's lover then sort of transfers to become one of Crod's followers. And he seems to have problems with that. He also has obvious problems with the bisexual Cyclops, the Biclops. And he has huge problems with Annika's open sexuality and her multiple partners. He's very uncomfortable with that. And it made watching him a rather uncomfortable experience for me. Looking at the show now, it seems that only Annika has the sort of normal... She seems to be the normal one, and that Crod seems, shall we say, somewhat reactionary, Brian?
Yeah, it's like they're doing a joke about him being a prude about sexual matters, but yeah, it didn't age well.
And I was struck on my viewing of this show by another show that we've covered not all that long ago, The Watch, which again attempted a fantasy setting, perhaps not so much comedy in there, you know, although it's set in the comedic world of Terry Pratchett. But I thought that show handled its cast of characters, the characters themselves and the actors who played them, and their representation diversity in that show much better. And it's 15 years ago, Brian. It just seems that Crod Mandoon has not aged terribly well. I found it rather wince-inducing watching it because of some of this issue.
Yeah, comedy often does not age as well as other things. But yeah, some of these things are so out of tune with where society is now that it's even more so here.
And I'll also just quickly mention another feature that sort of bothered me as well, which is Kevin Hart as the sort of so-called wizard Zazelric. And I'm thinking back to some of the fuss about the character of Jar Jar Binks in the Star Wars prequels. You might compare him also to Eddie Murphy voicing the donkey in the Shrek movies. But he is that sort of, I think it's become a bit of a racist stereotype of the fast-talking sidekick who's not very good at what he does and then sort of covers it up by a lot of patter and fast talk. And he's played for laughs in that role. And again, I don't think that's aged terribly well either, Brian.
Yeah, and there's that aspect of it, which is, as you say, rather uncomfortable now, but also the aspect of it just being Kevin Hart's comedy, which a lot of it is, but it's hard to see where one begins and the other ends. So yeah, a little awkward there. So I will say that the attempts at diversity in this are interesting, but it almost always falls back to stereotypes. It's nice to see multiple queer characters in there, especially General Arcadius, who has a male lover and is also an authority figure and, you know, this competent military character. But the character we see on screen much more is Bruce, who's a pretty awful caricature and stereotype there. And then the Biclops, this bisexual Cyclops, is very much a bisexual stereotype and is also a villain, which is another problematic trope for underrepresented groups, including gay and bisexual characters. And then we have Annika, who is, I think, an attempt to show this sort of empowered, polyamorous pagan woman who's in control of her own narrative and her own sexuality and is confident about everything, but it comes across more as just a way to show a hypersexual, scantily clad, you know, sort of glamazon type character sort of on display for us to look at. So a bit of a straight male gaze issue there. So, yeah, it's interesting to see some of what they were trying to do, I think, with some of that diversity. But, yeah, it did not work well. Looking at it now, it's just not great.
Yeah, and interesting, as you say, with Annika's character, that they'd gone for the costume, they'd gone for the chainmail bikini and the strange leather straps around her upper legs, which, you know, I don't think of any particular function, but yeah, it is sort of hypersexualized glamazon, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. So at that, we've sort of already been talking about our reactions to this, but let's move into some of what we thought in terms of the pros and cons, moving into slightly different things here. So, Eamon, what did you like about Crodman Dune and the Flaming Sword of Fire?
So, I'm going to struggle with this one, Brian, but let's start with the good stuff. And let's say that the actors throw themselves into their roles. They're really trying very hard. I would say the leads, you know, Sean Maguire, India de Beaufort, both look gorgeous. In or out of their costumes. So there is eye candy on display. Everybody seems to be trying very hard in the cast. And you'd noted off air, Brian, that in terms of some of the supporting actors, they get some quite big names in there. We noted John Rhys-Davies from Lord of the Rings actually turns up as a magician in this show.
Yes, and I thought he gave a good performance. Alex McQueen as Barnabas gave a good performance. The narration from Michael Gambon was very good and, you know, sort of handled the comedy well. So, you know, a lot of these smaller characters, General Arcadius as well, some of them did put in some pretty good performances here.
Yeah, it was impressive stuff in terms of, you know, the actors they managed to get to do this. I've mentioned, you know, the look of the show, because the shooting locations, the costumes, the hair and the makeup, it all looks great, doesn't it? It's very sort of, you know, again, quite a bit of money in this show, it would seem.
Yes, it definitely looks good, and I think it's shot fairly well as well. So yeah, the sort of look of things I thought worked pretty well.
And of course, I'm going to mention the Flaming Sword of Fire. Pretty good rig, actually, I think, Brian. That seems to work very well, considering that Crodman Dune actually does fight with the Flaming Sword, which, as I say, must have been a bit of a nightmare on set, but it looks great. And again, in Game of Thrones, I noticed that Beric Dondarrion has got the Flaming Sword. I wonder if it's a similar rig. I'm guessing it must be.
It probably is. And yes, that was a good practical effect. So is it time to move to the negatives? Things that we didn't like as much.
I don't really have anything else in the positive column unless you do, Brian. Otherwise, I will throw it to you to start off with some of the things we didn't like about this show.
Yes, so the whole sex comedy strand of it did not work for me. I'm not a big fan of the sex comedy things. You can see that in our episodes going back to Star Maidens, which was doing that sort of thing. And when you combine the sex comedy with some of the problematic issues with queer characters that we've mentioned, and the not great depiction with Annika, and then also the performance from Matt Lucas as Dongolore, this whole sort of chunk of things just did not work for me at all. And I think many aspects of it were just not done that well.
I would have to agree on that, Brian. I did not like quite a lot about this show. I've never found Little Britain funny at all. The only thing I can watch Matt Lucas in is Nardole in Doctor Who with Peter Capaldi, or when he was presenting the Great British Bake Off. But apart from that, I find him painfully unfunny, unfortunately. And this sort of humour that they're going for, we've talked many a time about the sort of attempted crossovers between genres and comedy, and how rare it is to get a hit like Red Dwarf or Hitchhiker's Guide. We've had quite a few flops along the way. Star Maidens is a great callback. That one's a while back, Brian.
It is, yeah. And that had the mess of, you know, that it was also a co-production with the German side of it trying to make it a sex comedy and the British production team trying to make it a serious sci-fi, which was a problem.
Yeah. So we have struggled. I, the ones that came to my mind were when we covered Hyperdrive, Dr. Terrible's House of Horrible, and Time Trumpet, I seem to remember. But this one, particularly when it's sort of sex-based comedy, it's workplace comedy, the fact that Crodmandoon seems just having difficulty relating to anybody at all, it just doesn't seem to work, unfortunately.
There were moments when they were trying to do more parody of fantasy shows, and I liked that more. I thought some of that worked, but there just wasn't enough of it. It was just something that came up occasionally, where they were much more focused on all of this sex comedy stuff, and the incompetence of the characters, and making pretty poor jokes about gay characters and women who were open about their sexuality and so on. So, yeah, a lot of this was actually quite hard to watch for me.
Yeah, I found this one a real slog as well, Brian. And I know we do sometimes get comments when we get into either politics or the subject of representation and diversity in the shows we watch. But, you know, we want there to be representation diversity done well, like, for instance, The Watch. And unfortunately, Crodmandoon does a rather terrible job of it. And strange how 15 years ago, television looked so much different in a way, Brian. It was an uncomfortable watch for me because of these features that we've been talking about.
Yeah, and I think quite honestly, if we try to set aside the discomfort and the fact that times have changed, it's still just not very good because it's just not funny. And the types of things it's doing, I didn't appreciate 15 years ago and I don't appreciate now. And I don't feel that the writing and, you know, some of the key comedy aspects and performance, I don't think they work.
No, I would say that everybody seems to be trying extremely hard.
Yeah. You
know, both in front of and behind the camera, but it just doesn't work. It does not land. Yeah, I put this one on our list, having only seen a tiny bit of it in 2009. And I sort of feel bad about putting it on the list, Brian, because watching it, I think if I'd seen all of it in 2009, like you said, it probably would have made me very uncomfortable then. It makes me very uncomfortable now.
Yeah, I'm glad we're talking about this because it's worthwhile to look at how things have changed from then to now, and to look at these different types of things that are done in the genre. But it may be a case of us watching something so you don't have to.
Yes, we took one for the team.
And on that note, I think it's time for our recommendations. Would you like to start, Eamon?
It's going to be a very short recommendation section, I think, Brian. As our listeners can tell, don't watch Crodmandoon and The Flaming Sword of Fire. The Flaming Sword of Fire is about the only good thing in it. No, I cannot recommend this show at all, and quite the opposite. It's a while since we've had such a definite thumbs down from me.
Yes, I cannot recommend this. Crodmandoon and the Flaming Sword of Fire is not worth your time. The only, you know, if you happen to be a big fan of both Matt Lucas and Kevin Hart, then maybe you want to look at a few minutes of it. But apart from that, no, this is not a good show and I will not recommend it.
And at this point, I usually say, if you think we've got this one wrong, if you disagree with our takes, please get in touch on all the various socials and let us know. But please do. But I don't think we're wrong on this one, Brian.
Yeah, I'd be happy to hear your ideas about what you like in it. But yeah, this one was quite something.
Okay.
So, in summary, Crodmandoon and the Flaming Sword of Fire introduced us to a classic fantasy sword and sorcery world with Crod and Annika and this group of characters in their adventuring and freedom fighting party are working to overthrow Chancellor Dungalore, and they go on a series of adventures to try to defeat him and to try to stop him from using the Eye of Golgagrim, which is this weapon, and does so with some rather unfortunate comedy and sex comedy and a little bit of parody that gives this show its style and its flavor.
There we go. British Invaders doing Crodmandoon so you don't have to.
Pretty much.
Please come and join us next time when we are on hopefully much safer ground. We're returning to the works of Lewis Carroll and looking at an adaptation of Alice in Wonderland from 1986 on the BBC, an adaptation that could be seen as a possible companion piece to another show that we have watched in the past.
Yes, absolutely. Until then, you can find all of our episodes, up to 450 of them now, at BritishInvaders.com. That includes the ones that are no longer in the podcast subscription feed. You can join our Facebook group if you search for British Invaders on Facebook. You can also follow us on Instagram and Threads. We are at British_Invaders_podcast.
Give us a follow. And another way to listen to us is on the Voice of Geeks Network, VogueNetwork.com. A couple of podcasts going out there, including British Invaders, but you'll also find lots of other geek-related content to have a nose around and have a look at VogueNetwork.com.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much indeed for listening. And until next time, it's Eamon in England saying very definitely, Crodman don't.